You are listening to Rootbound, a podcast about plants for when you're stuck inside.
If you're having weed problems, I feel bad for you, son. I've got 99 problems, but a vetch ain't one. That's because Rootbound is sponsored by the Common Vetch.
Hey everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of Rootbound. I'm the host of the show, and my name is Steve, and Rootbound is the podcast about plants for when you're stuck inside. And each week, I invite a guest who joins me on the show to share with us all about a plant that means something to them, and then I share with the guest about a plant that means something to me, and through this process, we can all learn more about plants and learn more about each other. It's the philosophy of the show that everybody has at least one plant that is meaningful to them, because plants are so integral to our lives as humans on this planet. Now, this episode, though, is a little bit different. It's one of the shows I like to call Mixed Greens. It's kind of a grab bag episode where we cover some things we've talked about on previous episodes, kind of revisit some stuff, etc. And to start out today, I actually happened to be in Texas at my grandparents' house. And a number of episodes, we talked to my friend Will about the prickly pear, and we talked about nopales, which is the prepared pads of the prickly pear cactus. And I've never harvested those. I've eaten them, at a restaurant or whatever, but I've never harvested prickly pear. And there happens to be a ton of prickly pear here, and it's the springtime, and it's the perfect time to harvest the young pads of the prickly pear. So yes, that's what we're gonna do today. We're gonna harvest some prickly pear cactus, and then we're gonna prepare it by getting rid of the spines. And finally, we're going to cook it and eat it. So that we'll do that throughout this episode. And there's actually this one little prickly pear here we're gonna harvest from. And my grandpa said I should actually harvest the whole thing because it's kind of like a stray. It's not growing where it should be, but I'm not really that hungry. But I will harvest a few of the pads from this, hopefully help it from getting a little bit too big for my grandpa in the path here. So the process that I've read about and looked about online, like I said, I've never done this before, and I have to be careful because they're cactus. They can hurt you. But the process I've learned is to use some kitchen tongs and then also a knife. You can hear the knife here, and you use the tongs to hold the cactus in place, and then you cut at the base of the fresh new pad, spring pad, and they have a different color. They're greener, brighter, not as dull, and that came off really easy. And then also these younger pads have less spines, which is good. So I've got one pad here. I'm going to put it down on the ground. I'm going to get just maybe one more because they're kind of small, and then we will go prepare them by cutting off these spines. But we'll check back in on that later in the episode.
In the garden where the sunlight dances on the leaves, we're connected by the roots beneath our feet. From the seeds we sow to the blooms that grow, together we will always be.
You're probably wondering what the heck you just listened to, and I'm happy to say that Rootbound does not have a new theme song. In fact, that kind of cheesy, weird bit of music you just heard was in fact composed entirely by artificial intelligence. I am a plant nerd, but I am also a technology nerd too, and I am really into playing with this new weird artificial intelligence stuff. And this new services just came out that lets you generate music from nothing, and so I had a lot of fun kind of making imaginary versions of the theme song to Rootbound, and so I thought through this episode I would pepper in these kind of fake theme songs to the show. So you'll hear that throughout the episode. And then at the end of the episode, we're going to have a little bit more in-depth conversation about some music stuff related to the show, but also related to AI. And I think it's a really fun conversation with a musician who's a friend of the show. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, let's jump right back into the rest of this special Mixed Greens episode of Rootbound. Take it away, fake song.
Rootbound in this garden, we'll explore. From the tallest trees to the flowers on the floor, root bound. We're connected through the earth, listening to nature's stories from sea to rebirth.
So back on the episode about tomatoes, I spoke with my wife Carla about tomatoes, and there's actually one thing that after we were finished recording and the episode was out, there's one thing she realized she forgot that she wanted to share about tomatoes. And so I have Carla here again.
Hi, yes.
And yes, what was that thing about tomatoes that you forgot to share with us?
Well, so I remembered it from my childhood. There used to be this commercial in which there were... It was a commercial for canned tomatoes.
Okay.
But the commercial was a little bit gruesome.
Okay.
I don't think I really appreciated it as much as much when I was a kid, that it was a little bit gruesome and disconcerting. But it's in essence these tomatoes singing about how this executioner is coming for them.
Oh, man.
To make them into tomato puree or tomato juice, and then but they're like, but it's worth it to be part of this product. So I don't think it makes it any better. I just remembering it being a very catchy song.
Do you remember how the song goes?
Yes, I do. But are you gonna make me sing it?
I'm not. Of course, it's a podcast, so you have to sing.
Okay. Well, to be fair, I'm not a singer.
Okay.
And I've also had like a lot of allergies recently.
That's okay.
You know. Oh my gosh. Okay, fine. So the song was something like, "Estaban los tomatitos muy contentitos cuando llegó el verdugo, los hizo jugo." And that's the first stanza, mm-hmm. And that's the little tomato saying they were like really happy until the executioner came for them to make them juice. You know, like tomato juice and or tomato puree, I guess would be better. I don't know, but
sure.
Like the word jugo is more like juice. Anyway, and then the second stanza, I forget how it goes, but I do remember saying like, but it's worth it so it can be part of this canned product. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah,
very interesting. Well, I'll look up that ad and hopefully we'll hear the real version right now.
Cuando llegó el verdugo a hacer los jugos.
¿Qué me importa la muerte? Dice el coro. Si muero con decoro y los productos del fuerte.
El puré de tomate del fuerte le da más de 2 kilos del mejor tomate concentrados en cada kilo de puré. Puré de tomate del fuerte, el auténtico etiqueta negra.
Which you made me sing it, even though you were going to look up the ad.
Yeah.
Okay.
In a world of green and vibrant hues, a podcast blooms for all to choose. With each episode, a garden found. Get ready for the sound. Root bound, growing strong. Join us, sing along. From leaf to stem, we'll take you there. Root bound in the air. From David Zori's little plant tales, from catty deserts to fern-filled dales. Luscious melodies of botanical beat. Root bound, it's a tasty treat.
Not too long ago, we spoke with Ashlyn about black walnuts, and after the episode was over, Ashlyn sent me a couple notes that she wanted to mention, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to address that now. First, Ashlyn says that she fumbled when she referenced that black walnuts were not used in medicine. They have been used in traditional medicine. She was just not comfortable in talking about it because it's not something she had experience with, and I think that's very wise to not talk about medicinal uses of plants when you don't have a lot of knowledge. So there are traditional uses of black walnut for medicine, but it's just not something that we chatted about, and that's something we go by on the show a lot. We are a little bit careful talking about medicinal uses.
Also, and I'm going to read this verbatim what Ashlyn said, because this took me on an interesting path, actually, and you're going to hear that in a minute. But Ashlyn said, I don't know if I have a false memory or not, but I could have sworn I'd eaten black walnuts / black walnut ice cream, and that they tasted very similar, if not a bit bolder, to the common walnut. But I went out this past week and got some Hammonds per our chat. That's the black walnut company we talked about in that episode. Go listen back to it. And she says, I don't know if they were rancid or not, but they were quite unpleasant, bordering on chemically or cheesy. They weren't expired, and some sources said that's how they can taste. So now I'm questioning what a black walnut should taste like. So this is pretty interesting. I had to go out and get some to see how they tasted again. And what you're about to hear is I was in Texas. I was at my grandparents' house. And also in the episode of Black Walnut, I talked about this kind of familial connection to the black walnut through some family, and we're going to kind of recap that in a conversation with my grandpa, but also we're going to address the situation about how black walnuts taste. So what you're about to hear is kind of an impromptu conversation with my grandpa about black walnuts. Also in the background, you'll hear my kid making some noise, which you know is always fun, and also my dad is there, who's pushing her around in a stroller, and he also had some things to chime in about black walnut. So let's give that a listen now. Trying to remember exactly the details of who I'm related to, who harvested black walnuts, and what the story with that about that was.
Okay, my father, M.D. Ellington, Millard Duval Ellington, and his brother Marlon, their father died of typhoid fever when they were less than 2 years old. So they never knew their father. They were raised by their grandfather, Grandpa Will, and his wife Samantha.
So this is your dad's grandfather?
Yeah, and his and Grandpa Will's wife Samantha. And she died. Basically, they were raised by Grandpa Will on his farm near Ellijay, Georgia. And that's where the black walnuts, that was their money crop, was black walnuts. And I don't remember, I could find you somewhere, he wrote a little one-page article about it. He said, we ate all we could and sold the rest, or something.
That was Grandpa Will who said that?
That was my dad that said that, yeah. But he was living with his Grandpa Will on Grandpa Will's farm north of Ellijay, Georgia.
And they were selling the black walnuts in somewhere?
I don't know where they sold them, but he said that was their money crop.
Interesting. Yeah. So that was like the main cash source.
That's the impression you got. I can't believe that was their only money, but that was the way he said it.
That's very interesting. Have you ever had a black walnut before?
No, but your grandma has, and she has nothing good to say about them.
Okay, well, we're going to try some now. Because I have some black walnuts.
It's not the eating them that's the problem. It's the peeling them.
I've heard. I've never tried myself, but this is...
That's what she disliked so much about them, was getting the meat out of the hull.
I've heard it is very difficult. I once was on a foraging walk where we had one, and the guy smashed it with a shoe to get the husk off, and then he had a nutcracker, but even then he had to tweeze out the meat. I think there's better ways to do it, but this is a company that is the main company doing commercial black walnuts, but the crop is still a wild crop. Basically, people all over the country bring their black walnuts to these collection stations for this company, and then they process them with machinery. So let's try.
You need to ask your grandma her opinion of black walnuts.
I'll have to ask her about it,
I suspect it was when they lived in Tennessee, which that's not really sense. That far from geologically and ecologically, not that far from Ellijay, Georgia. And they used to...
It's okay.
Who?
So there's different kinds of walnuts?
Black walnut is Juglans nigra. It's native to North America. The one we all eat is Juglans regia, which is the European or English walnut.
And they're hard to crack, but they're not nearly as hard to crack as the black walnut.
These are the little ones. I accidentally got the ones for cooking recipes. So these are black walnuts.
Well, I have a walnut story if you want.
Okay. Mm. So they have...
That's good.
Very different taste than the regular walnut.
Mm-hmm.
They're more... How would you describe it?
I'm not good at that. I have very poor taste buds.
I'm not very good at it either. Dad, how would you describe the taste of these?
Interesting. I had some walnuts this morning at breakfast. You know, not.
Mm-hmm. Give me just a few more.
It's reminiscent of when you get a, when you eat a pecan right out of the shell, and you get that little inside piece that's got kind of a bitter taste.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking
about? Mm-hmm.
Like a bark, sort of a bark taste. What's that? Maybe tannin? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely, I think they're definitely more flavorful than than a normal walnut, I think. Yeah, really interesting. I thought that was fascinating, and I told this on my podcast recently, but there was a black walnut tree in my neighborhood, and I recognized it, and I saw the nuts on the ground, but it was a little bit late. So I was like, next year, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to try to harvest some myself. But then they cut it down and put up a building. And it reminded me, it was like a little bit of an echo, because I guess the story with Grandpa Will is that he lost his black walnuts because of, I guess, back taxes or something?
He lost all his land. He never paid any federal taxes. So when he died, I think it was after, when he died, it might have been before, the government took all his land. And that's part of the Chattahoochee National Forest now.
Interesting.
And there's another tale there. This, my dad and his brother Marlin and their cousin Willard contended there was gold on Grandpa Will's land. So the government gave them 30 days or 60 days or something to prove up a gold claim. And I wish I had recorded my dad's description of it. Back in those days, there were no RVs.
Mm-hmm.
So they rented a stake bed truck with canvas sides and a canvas top on it and converted it to an RV. I guess they had a porta potty in there. I don't know. He didn't describe that part. But anyway, the three of them, Marlin and Willard and my dad, lived in that while they prospected up there. And they did find gold. In fact, I used to have a big chunk of rock about as big as your fist that you could see a vein of it in it. But the rock was harder than a black walnut. And the cost of getting the gold out, you know, grinding up and was prohibitive. Of course, back in those days, gold was $32 an ounce. It was controlled. And so technically there was gold. Economically, it could not be proven. So they never got to keep the land.
Well, I guess it's nice that it's a national forest and not strip land for gold now.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
But probably if gold had been $1,600 an ounce, they would have been able to. But, and I gave the piece of ore to my brother John, because he lived close to there, and if he wanted to go, he could know what kind of rock to look for. But it was hard rock.
Well, you remember there was an old guy I worked with when I was a plumber's helper. Old Donnell, and Donnell told me now he didn't specify what kind of walnut. They were wild grown walnuts.
They were probably black walnuts.
And he said, "You want? We always talking about going fishing." He goes, "You get the green walnuts and throw them in a gunny sack. Fill that gunny sack, and get a baseball bat, and you go down to the fishing hole, and throw that gunny sack in there, and beat it with the baseball bat, and the fish will just float up to the top."
It's true. It's true. It's highly illegal, but it is true. The tannins in the black walnut, like the fruit meat, will stun fish, and it is like a. Yeah, my guest when I talked about black walnuts told me about that. It was like a traditional fish harvesting technique for indigenous peoples going back a long time. But yeah, highly illegal today. After I got home from the trip to my grandparents' house, my grandpa sent me this article that he mentioned that was written by his father about his grandfather. And so I thought I would read a few little pieces of it now that have to do with what we were talking about. So yeah, this is my great-grandfather writing about my great-great-great-grandfather, if I think I got that right. And just the first couple sentences I think are interesting to read just to kind of set the stage of who my great-great-great-grandfather was. In the words of my great-grandfather, My grandfather, William Ellington, was a revolving gentleman. Any way you looked at him, he was a gentleman. He had little formal education, but he knew a lot about many things. He chewed tobacco, drank liquor, cussed some, and didn't go to church much, but he was a good man in the ways that are important. So then it goes on to tell more about his life and such, and how he raised my great-grandfather. And then we get to the section about black walnuts, which my grandpa mentioned in the segment we just heard. And this is the quote about black walnuts in that section. He said, "Our only money crops were field peas and black walnuts. Grandpa had us boys pick and shell the peas and pick up, hull, and dry the walnuts on half shares. We sold our half to buy our winter clothes and ate his half. Earning the money to buy our clothes taught us something of its value." And I thought that was a really interesting thing, and it's made me reflect things in my life. And it's a lot to go into, but just that moment about a grandfather teaching these kids about how to like earn a living, but then also giving his share, his half, to the boys to eat, I thought was really kind of a beautiful message. And then the last little bit I really loved in this article, which doesn't really have to do with plants. I mean, kind of. We've talked about spirits before on this podcast because most spirits come from plants. But this line I thought was really great about my great-great-great-grandfather. It says, "Grandpa believed in abiding by the law. He even decided during Prohibition that if it was illegal to manufacture and sell liquor, he wasn't going to buy and drink it. His resolve weakened after a few weeks. It was too much to expect a man in his 80s who'd been drinking all his adult life to become a total abstainer overnight." I think that is very true, and I love that. So before we get off the black walnut subject, I have one more little recording to share. My grandpa told me that I should ask my grandma about black walnuts, and you'll see it was quite an interesting conversation. In addition to hearing from my grandma, there was actually quite a bit of family in the room, so you'll hear a little bit of chime in from the peanut gallery, or should I say the black walnut gallery, including my kid who repeatedly was making some sonorous sounds to punctuate this conversation. And we will learn that, of course, opinions vary when it comes to the taste of black walnuts. I'm supposed to ask you about black walnuts.
Oh my gosh, no, don't remind me of black walnuts.
Why?
When we lived in Tennessee, we would make fudge, and the black walnuts grew abundantly. And we always put black walnuts in the fudge, and it just ruined a perfectly good batch of fudge.
You didn't like the flavor?
No.
What was wrong with the flavor?
Can I say this?
Yeah, sure.
No, it just, I don't know. I was...
You didn't like apple peel.
14. No, they had an awful taste. They just didn't taste good.
Whose idea was it to make fudge with the black walnuts?
Well, they were free.
Uh-huh.
You know.
And mother's idea.
Yeah, probably mother's.
Uh-huh. They were free.
Yeah.
And you had to crack them?
Yeah, oh yeah. Hard shell.
How did you do that?
I have no idea. Probably with a big old hammer.
Very good. Well, do you want to try some? I have some.
Not no.
Oh, come
but
on.
Heck no.
They didn't taste awful to me.
They taste bitter.
Here.
Well, I didn't think so.
You
put your hand out. I'll give you a few.
You are now out of my will.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
There's some black walnuts.
Me?
Yes, they're just little. You want to try some?
I think I'm
try
allergic.
Some. Oh, okay. You're allergic to tree nuts? Okay.
Oh, God. That's horrible.
Really?
Maybe you have to have a gene.
Maybe.
Oh, it's
you
so
don't
bitter.
Like it? Interesting.
Nasty.
I ate them yesterday.
Yeah, they're good.
No, no. There's something wrong with them. They're rancid.
That's good.
No, they're just... They just
did you try, black did you try some?
Yeah, I did.
You don't like them?
They taste like an air conditioner filter.
Now it all makes sense. It's got to be genetic because...
You don't like them anymore?
Oh, I love air conditioning.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I like them. I think they're great.
Oh, I like everything but.
Yeah.
I think a butt would taste better. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I think
it. What are you looking at me for?
No, yeah. They're good. You don't want to keep them and bake some fudge with them?
I'll send them to you.
Okay, all right. Well, all right. That's it. I just wanted to hear your story about black walnuts. Thanks, Grandma. Okay, back outside here in Central Texas. I've got my two prickly pear pads on a cutting board outside, and now I'm going to cut off all of the spines. I've read that you do it kind of just like filleting a fish. So first I'm actually going to cut off a little bit of the bottom to give me a place to hold, just to make sure I don't have any spines there. Cut off the edge. Yes, like that. Oh, it's very, very kind of viscous inside, a little bit like aloe, which I heard is a nice aspect of them. Gonna shave off some of these spines at the bottom. Just like that. Turn it over, give myself a place to hold at the bottom, because it'll be easier to scrape the spines off while I'm not holding it with the tongs. It's gonna be a little bit of a long process here, but let's see. I'll take some pictures of this, post them on the social media before we're done. So now I'm holding the bottom of the prickly pear and get this little edge cut off. And I'm just gonna like fillet it like a fish to cut off all these little areas with spines. Yeah, that's working pretty easily. And you know, I guess the benefit of two, they're not only are the young pads in the spring more tender and therefore tastier, but also the spines are not as fully developed and so not as hazardous. But there are definitely some spines on here. Ooh. Well, this is going to be a little bit of a process, but yes, I'll check back in at later in the episode when we're ready to eat this. In a world of greens and hues so bright, where flowers bloom and reach for the light, we dive into soil where secrets are. So back on the episode where we talked about nasturtiums with Party Nails, if you remember, and if you go back and listen to, we created a fake band called Mustard Oil Bomb, which was a reference to why nasturtiums are so spicy. Go listen, it's very interesting, but we made a fake band, and then later in that episode, I made up a fake song for that fake band called Nose Twister, because that is what the name nasturtium means. And so now I have Party Nails back with me on the show today. Hey, how's it going?
Hi! I'm so happy.
And so what I have done here, and you've heard earlier in this episode, I've been playing around with AI-generated music, and I thought it'd be fun to generate some AI versions of the song Nose Twister by Mustard Oil Bomb. Fake songs by a fake band on a show that has fake ads. But first, Party Nails, I was wondering, what do you think, what genre is Mustard Oil Bomb? What do you think the song Nose Twister sounds like?
I think, or maybe this is past tense now, thought, because I think my mind might be blown right now. Okay. It sounds like a rock band, like a da 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 da, like kind of a thing. And maybe we break things on stage. Mustard Oil Bomb sounds explosive to me.
Okay, yes, very good. Okay, so it's a little different than I thought. I actually have three different versions. We're not going to listen to the whole songs here, but I'm going to play you three different incarnations of Mustard Oil Bomb.
Love.
Okay?
Love.
All right, so here we go. This is the first one. I thought it could be a ska band. You know, I could see that, right? So, and I've got a little bit of ska in my soul from my from high school. So this is the one that actually the other two I didn't name them, but this one is called "Dancing the Nasturtiums" by Mustard Oil Bomb.
Beautiful.
The ska version. Here we go.
They boom in vibrant colors, red and gold, twisting and turning with a rhythm so bold. Nasturtiums in the garden, a sight to behold. We'll pick them and dance, let the story unfold. Dancing in the nasturtium, singing in the sun. Bright petals swaying to the sky, we're having fun.
What do you think?
I love it. It's like if No Doubt was fronted by, like, a man that eats lots of nasturtiums.
Totally. Yeah, pretty good. I was very impressed when this happened, because this is literally, I just put in a description, Mustard Oil Bomb,
mind-blowing.
Ska band. It wrote the lyrics. It did everything all in just one go. It's really impressive.
And it's Dancing in the Nasturtiums is
Dancing
the title.
Dancing in the Nasturtiums, yeah. That's
so
it.
I can see it, like, I can see the music video, like the ska dance, but like we're in a field of nasturtiums, you know?
Totally. All right, I'm going to fade this one out, and we'll get into the next one here.
Okay, cool.
All right. All right, so the next one, I also thought, a little bit similar to yours, I thought that it could also be a punk band.
Mm.
And this one maybe didn't hit the mark, at least my favorite kind of punk rock, but it fits the bill. This one's just called Nose Twister. The other one, it just gave it a new name. I didn't ask it to, Dancing in the Nasturtiums, but this one is called Nose Twister.
Okay.
And let me go back to the beginning of it. And here we go. Here's the punk rock version. Let me turn the volume back up.
Nose Twister, it's a sound I can't resist. But don't you know, there's a hidden twist. It's not about anarchy, it's about flowers, I insist.
What was the last line?
That's the song, the lyrics. There's a hidden twist. It's not about anarchy. It's about flowers, I insist. So that's pretty on. The lyrics are pretty on the nose. There's not a lot of subtlety to the lyrics.
On the nose, yeah, 100%. Yes, gorgeous. I really like that one.
So yeah, that was the punk rock version of Nose Twister, an ode to the flower we love best, I think was one of the lines.
Yeah, what were some of the other lyrics? I love this one.
Yeah, I've got them in here somewhere. I've got so many different versions of this that I've made that
Did you feed this one any lyrics?
No, it just makes up the lyrics and the song and all the music. It's very mind-blowing.
Yeah. Nose twisting, if you will.
Yeah, yes indeed. It's very nose twisting. Very good. Let's see. That one, punk rock nose twister. The lyrics are we've got Mustard Oil Bomb, we're planting seeds of change through guitars and drums, our message will arrange. Nasturtiums are rebels too, bursting with life and zest. Nose Twister, our secret ode to the flower we love best. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's really nice. Yeah, I'm feeling it. Yeah. I love the idea of a nasturtium as like a symbol of something. Yeah, because it is pretty, like, it's, you know, it's got like some spunk.
Punk rock. They're right? Like colorful and flashy, but also like, you know, spicy and sharp.
Yeah,
and
they have that hard edge to them.
Indeed.
Yeah, and they're very like economical, which I feel like is kind of part of the punk ethos, like the DIY kind of thing, you know.
Yeah
you can eat them leaves wherever. Yeah.
Okay, final one. I think this one might be my favorite, just because I was so impressed at, I think, kind of the musicality of it as far as it just being generated by AI. But I don't know. I go back and forth for which of these is my favorite. But the last one is the metal version of Mustard Oil Bomb, which that's, I think, what I really thought when I was thinking, Mustard Oil Bomb, yeah!
I feel like that was what I thought when we first said it.
Yeah, so here we go. This is the metal version of Nose Twister by Mustard Oil Bomb. Yeah!
Yeah!
The syncopation. I didn't know that AI could do syncopation.
I wonder where it learned that from.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you because what did you say?
Oh, I said, I wonder where it learned that from. The syncope, like what?
All of our music.
Learning. Yeah.
Forever.
Forever.
Like, bring it back up for a minute. There's always a little break in here. Yeah. Oh, I guess that was in. Yeah. So, big glass hit. Yeah. So that was the metal version, and I was pretty impressed by that. The lyrics to that one, the first verse, is pretty good. It says, "Raging fire, burning bright in the darkness of the night, nasturtiums blooming with might, unleashing color so absurdly bright."
Whoa! That's how I feel about them.
Yeah, yeah.
Truly. Like, I'm like, when I see them, I'm like, can you believe it? And I want to tell other people, like, do you see this? It's so neon and bright. Like, in the night, I'm like
I've made these, and sometimes it's a little bit hard to understand what the robot voice is saying. But the second verse is, "Petals fierce like fiery blades, thorns sharp like a fatal cascade." They don't have thorns. So that was a little bit, come on, AI. "Embracing chaos in metal parade, nasturtiums, our love never fade."
This is like feeling right. This is the correct one, I think.
All right, that is it. Mustard Oil Bomb is a metal band, I think, officially.
Because like the shield appearance and then talking about armor and metal and like, I don't know, it just like is all kind of going together.
Totally. Yeah, you're right. So just as we wrap up here, you know, I'm like into plants, but also into like tech stuff. So I like mixing in some of this stuff, and the AI stuff is very interesting and funny and weird, but also like scary in a number of ways. And I wonder, as a musician, I feel like some ways I felt bad like inviting you on here to show you how technology is going to take your job. But what are your thoughts about this stuff?
Well, you know, my dad is a visual artist and he is obsessed with AI right now. So we've talked about it a lot. And he's so worried. He's like, can you believe it? Can you believe it? And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. It just doesn't sound like anybody I know. Like it doesn't, like I can't see it replacing, I understand it can replace elements of what a human can do. But like even now, it's like that one verse that everything was so awesome and fun, right? But then there's this one idea that's like the thorn. And it's like, okay, well, like now we're going to go in with a human's touch and sort of deal with that. Or I guess you could like teach it to deal with that. Yeah, it doesn't. Maybe I'm naive and I should be more worried. But to me, I feel like people are going to, there's already no money in music. Like there's already it's hard, and you have to think about it really creatively and why you do it every day. You have to create like your job every day, you know, and your work environment, and what it is that's valuable to you as a worker, but also to you as somebody who's capable of making things, like, and how you can make money off of those things. So to me, so much of the value in being a musician is in making things. So I don't really, and I think that really translates in the products, you know, like I think that the love of the craft is itself part of the thing that gets made, and that's something that AI can't, I'm sure AI at some point will be intelligent enough to have an aura of that, but
a passion and love
in a way, it will have like, you know, a humanness to it, but it can't possibly be me or somebody, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't know what I'm thinking or what I want to write about or anybody. It can know what it knows, and that's great. Good for it. You know, that's kind of my thought.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I go back and forth all the time because I think it's so cool. I think it can be an interesting tool.
Yeah.
And I do think about the history of art. And for example, there was a very similar freak out when photography happened and all the painters were like, we're out of a job. No one's ever going to paint again because of cameras. And that clearly wasn't true.
Yeah.
So I think I want to think about it as like a new tool, something that could be interesting to use. And yeah, things are going to be weird. Things are going to be really weird. They're going to get weirder. But weirdness can be good for art.
Yeah, totally. That's I like that I'm hearing somebody with a sort of an optimist slash like almost just sort of a creative thought process about the role that it could play versus a pessimistic, like, doomsday perspective on AI. I do worry about AI from an algorithmic and advertising perspective. I do think that's really wild, the way that it can hijack our time just to get us to look at, like, basically ads and, like, weird propaganda and stuff. That's weird to me. And I understand that that itself is AI, but AI as an artist, as a musician, as a image generator, stuff. Exactly. Yeah, that stuff to me is like, cool, well, that looks like AI, or that sounds like AI. It doesn't look or sound like this other artist that I'm also interested in, you know? And it's cool to hear somebody else, like, your perspective is similar and with your own, you know, flavor. And photography is a great, like, analogy.
Yeah, well, thank you for letting me subject you to some AI versions of our fake band.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I thought this is so sweet. And I was telling you before we hit record, every time I read Mustard Oil Bomb, I just, like, I'm giggling all over. It's just so silly and sweet and funny.
We ride the thorny trails, roots like chains, they grip the earth in the garden where metal prevails. He's lashing the wild wind scream. Strings pluck the pulse of a knife. Flowers bloom with fires light. In the darkness we find our might. Sapings rise from the metal dust. In the screams of nature, in metal we trust. Hear the echo of the ancient bark, where the deep roots wander in the shadows stark. Our trunks beat in rhythm with the earth's deep cries. Under the metal sky.
Okay, I am back here with my nopalitos, and I have successfully removed all the thorns. I only got, like, two little splinters in my fingers, too, so I can chalk that up as a success. Second thought, if I would have done it over again, I saw another method where people took the pads and used, like a piece of carpet or, like, a rough brush and then held the pad in their hand like that and then rubbed off the bristles and they kind of got the bristles to, like, come off like they were coming off in something, and they released easier that way. And I think that might have been easier because cutting them off with a knife, I ended up with getting a lot of little spines, like, all over the place, and I did get a couple of my fingers. And even looking at the cactus now, it seems like there's, like, one left in the nopal. So it's yeah, you know, it's eating cactus. I guess it has its perils. But yeah, I have two kind of versions of it here. I have some ones that I kept fresh, which you can eat it fresh and raw. And it tastes, it's very fresh. My grandma said it tastes a bit like a bell pepper, which is true. Very lemony, kind of mucilaginous. It has a little bit of texture, like, I think how aloe vera feels. But they're really good and fresh. I've read that some people use them in salads, which I think would be pretty good. And also some people put them into smoothies, which I think would also be really good. Really fun, fresh, tangy treat. And then I also have some that I've boiled here, which I think is a pretty common way to prepare them. I'm gonna see if there's a lot of taste difference between the boiled or in the and just the fresh here. Let's try. Mmm. It's definitely like more tart. It tastes more like a cooked green bean, maybe a little bit. A little bit of the same texture too. But yeah, pretty good. I wish I had some prickly pear at my house. I know there's definitely some in Virginia where I live, not as much as here in Texas, but I should keep my eye out because it's actually not that hard to harvest and it's a lot of food you can get. It's just the process of getting the spines out, which is a little perilous, probably keeps some people away, but actually a really nice food that's really abundant because this plant grows everywhere. And yeah, so thank you for letting me share this process with you, and thank you for listening to this special Mixed Greens episode of Rootbound. Talk to you on the next one. On this special Mixed Greens episode of Rootbound, we heard from my wife Carla, my grandpa, my grandma, and my dad, and also Party Nails, aka Alana Carroll, who is a really awesome musician. Go check out her tunes on all the places. In the show notes, you'll find links to Party Nails' music. You'll also find all of the fake songs we heard today, and there will also be that letter written by my great-grandfather about my great-great-great-grandfather. If you're a fan of this podcast and you want to help support the show, visit rootboundpodcast.com/support to find all the ways you can help out, including supporting the show on Patreon. Rootbound is hosted by a guy who likes the taste of black walnuts, Steve Ellington. Music by Christian Krigiskota. Fake ads by David Lonnie. Rootbound is a podcast about plants for when you're stuck inside, but if you can go outside, you could go dancing in the nasturtiums. Dancing in the nasturtium, singing in the sun. Bright bells swaying to the sky, we're having fun. Jumping and skanking with a smile on our faces. Busted or bombed or taking to the places. Kicking up our heels to the sound of brass. Nasturtiums make the perfect dance hall first class. Sweating and grooving with a style that's fast. Come join the skank, this moment won't last.
Comment Vetch. Start trying to make Vetch happen.